Hi everyone, welcome to Data Science with Python Pandas. This is a CS50 seminar and my name is Athena Khan. Just to give you a little bit introduction about myself, I'm a sophomore here at Harvard and I'm in FOHO. This past summer I interned at Booz Allen Hamilton, a tech consulting firm, and there I was doing like cybersecurity and data science research. On campus, I'm involved with the Harvard Open Data Project, among other things, where we try to aggregate all of Harvard's data into one central area. That way, students can work with data from all across the university to create something special and some applications that improve student life. I'm also on the school's curling team. Just to give you a brief introduction about data science, this is an incredibly evolving field that's growing so quickly. Right now on Glassdoor, it's rated as the number one best job in America in 2016, and you can have a median base salary of $116,000. Harvard Business Review also listed it as the sexiest job of the 21st century, and it's always growing. If we look at Indeed, we see the number of job postings has been skyrocketing. In the past 4 years alone, the number of postings have increased 8 times. Which is pretty incredible, just because data science is such a growing field and every company now wants to use it. If we also look at job seeker interest versus job posting, we see that there are sometimes 30 times more posts than there are people to fill them, and we also have at minimum still almost 20, which is incredible, and we want to fill that demand. So here I'll be teaching some data science. Stephen Few once said that numbers have an important story to tell. They rely on you to give them a clear and convincing voice, and today I'll be helping you to develop that clear and convincing voice. If we look at some examples of data science, we have seen things like how data science has been used to predict results for the election, and so we can see here there is a diagram about how many different ways Clinton can win, how many different ways Trump can win, just depending on the number of different results. And this results in a very like interactive and intuitive visualization. So if we want to look at the brief article here, we see here a little bit some election results. And this was just released pretty recently, actually, updated 28 minutes ago. So we see here there are things like the percentage over time on the likelihood of winning. We also have where exactly the race has shifted, some things about state-by-state estimates divided by time. And so this is just a really intuitive way for people all across the world to be accessing this data. And so data scientists are always taking this data in these huge spreadsheets that aren't always accessible for people to see. And that way, people can actually observe what's going on. We also can see different forecasts, some different outcomes that are pretty likely, and again, an interactive visualization for people to really understand the data that's going on. Some other ways are that we can see Obama rates are rising here, or Obamacare rates are rising, and there's a graph to see how that's changing. We've also used data to catch people like Osama bin Laden and to fight crime. So data science just has a lot of different usages across many different fields. There are many steps of data science, and I'll be going through them today. So the first thing is you want to ask a question. And this is important to ask a question because otherwise, there's nothing to answer. Data science is a tool, and so once you have a question to answer, you use data science to answer that. You can't just use data science on some arbitrary data set that you don't care too much about. Next, you want to get the data, and so there are a wide variety of places to get the data, but you just want to find a data set that you also care about. After that, you can explore the data set a little bit, just get a better sense of what kind of descriptive statistics you're looking for. Next, you want to model the data. So what happens if you are trying to predict something years into the future? What happens if this scenario occurs? Or what happens if this predictor changes a lot? Then you want to see what could possibly happen based on your model. And models always improve when you have more data, and so it's always good to get more data. Finally, you want to communicate all of your information, because while it's great that a data scientist has all of this information that they found and all these visualizations, it's really important to share that with like your boss or other colleagues. That way there can be something actionable about it. So in the examples we showed before, we've seen things like how Osama bin Laden was caught using data science. But if the person who's the data scientist like came up with the data and couldn't present that effectively, then that couldn't have happened. There are a bunch of different tools to help you get along, help you find all of this information. So when asking a question, you can think about to your own experiences. What are some issues that you faced before? What is something that you want to know more about? You can also look at websites like Kaggle, for example, which presents data challenges pretty frequently. And so if a company poses a question, you can always answer them yourself. You can also talk to some experts. What kind of things are they looking to answer that they might not necessarily have the capability to address? And so you can help them using the data that you find to answer their question. As for getting the data, there are many different ways to get data. You can scrape a web page so that you can get information that way. You can also look at databases if you have access to one. And finally, a lot of different places have like Excel spreadsheets or CSVs, comma separated values and text files that are really easy to work with. After that, you want to explore the data a little bit. And so we have a couple different Python libraries along with others, but Python seems to be pretty common in the industry. You have libraries such as Pandas, Matplotlib, which is more for like visualization, and then NumPy as well, which works with like arrays. And so after that, you want to work with modeling the data, so predicting based on predicting things or extrapolating essentially. And so you can also do this with Pandas, and also a library that's gaining a lot of traction is sklearn, which is more for like machine learning. And finally, you want to communicate your information. So Matplotlib is great for creating graphs, and D3 is great for creating like interactive visualizations. But as we've seen before, Pandas is used in both Explore and modeling, and also Matplotlib and NumPy is built into Pandas. So that's why Pandas is great. So we're going to be exploring that today. Just a little bit more information about Pandas. It's a Python library, as I mentioned before, and it's great for a wide variety of steps in the data science process. So things like cleaning, analysis, and visualization, it's super easy, very quick. And you can, it's very flexible, so you can work with a bunch of different data types. And so many different types at once. You could have several different columns with like strings, but also like numbers, and even like strings within strings, and it's great. And finally, you can integrate well with other libraries because it's built off of Python. It also built, it works with like NumPy tools and other different libraries as well. So it's pretty easy to integrate. Next, we'll also be using Jupyter Notebook. So this is kind of similar to the CS50 IDE, but this is preferential for data science because you can see the graphs like inline and you don't have to worry about like loading things separately. You also have like all of your tools and all your libraries already loaded. So if you download a package installer called Anaconda, that has all of these tools already. It also allows over 40 languages, so today we'll be focusing on Python, but it's great that you can like share notebooks and work with many different languages as well. So we're gonna launch into Pandas. And so there are two different data types in Python Pandas. So the main one is called series, and there's another great one called data frame. And so series are essentially NumPy arrays. They're essentially arrays. So you can index through them just as you did in CS50. But one difference is that you can hold a lot of different data types. So this is kind of similar to a Python array. So we can work on a couple different exercises. So here's going to be our notebook where we're going to be working with all of our information. This way you can see everything as it goes. See, you have like the code here, and then if you press Shift Enter, it loads the code for you. So here in this section, we're going to be exploring different series. And so first, you want to import the library, as you did in the last pset for CS50. So if you import pandas as PD, that PD means that you can access different modules within Panda just using the word PD. So you don't have to type pandas all the time. So if you want to create a series, you just call pd.series. And then this generates this NumPy command. Import NumPy as np. This NumPy command generates 5 random numbers. And then in the series, you'll also have an index. So let's see what it creates. So as you can see, you have an index here, A, B, C, D, E. And then you have your 5 random numbers from just here. You can also, because this isn't saved inside of a variable, it's just pd.series, if you want to save it inside of a variable, you can also do the same thing. You also don't need to have an index. You can just have 0, and the default is just 0 through 4. Next, you have you can also index through them because they are different arrays. So can someone tell me what S0 would return here?
The first value.
Yeah, exactly. And then do you know what this one is? Exactly. So here you have your first value as you had here. And then after, when you are slicing through them, it gets you 0, 1, and 2. So that's a series in a nutshell. The next type of data structure is called a data frame. And so essentially, this is just multiple series added together into one table. That way you can work with many different series at once, and that way you can work with many different data types as well. You can also index through index and columns. That way you can just work with many different data types very quickly. So here we're going to do a couple exercises with data frames. And so first we create a data frame in the same way. So when we call pd.dataframe, that means you access the command data frame in pandas. That means you create a data frame out of S. So S, remember, was this series back up here. So we're going to create a data frame out of that series, and we're going to call that column column 1. So as you can see, it's the exact same series that we had before. These random 5 numbers put into this data frame. And then its column is named column 1. You can also access the column by the name if you want to have a specific column. So if you call df, which is the name of the data frame, and then in brackets column 1, kind of like what we did in the last piece with accessing like dicts, then you can access that first column. It's also really easy to work with different functions applied to that. And so, for example, if we wanted to create another column called column 2, for example, and we want that column to be the same as column 1 but multiplied by 4, it would just be like adding another element in that dict. So then it would be df, and then in that dict we'd be creating something else called column 2, and then that's equal to the column 1 times 4. And so as you can see, we've added a second column that's exactly the same, except it's multiplied by 4. So it's pretty intuitive. You can work with many different other functions as well. And so if you want to add something like df times 5, or like subtracting, or you can even add or subtract 2 different columns, you can add multiple columns. It's pretty flexible with what you can do. You can also work with other manipulations, such as something like sorting. So if you want to you can do other things such as sorting. So if you want to sort by column 2, for example, you can take this column and you can call df.sortValues and then by column 2. And if you want to preserve it, make sure to set it to a variable, because this just sorts it and it doesn't actually affect how the data frame actually looks. And so if you sort by column 2, you can see that the whole data frame is just sorted with these indices staying the same. So for example, you see that column 2, this one has the lowest value, so it's going to be at the top. And then you also have the indices preserved, sorted by, that column 2. You can also do something called Boolean indexing, which is where, so if you recall from a Python array, if you just call, for example, is this array less than 2, then it should return like trues and falses to see whether like each element is actually less than 2. So the same concept can be applied to a data frame. And so if you call like this data frame, if you want to access things that in column 2 are less than 2, then you can just do syntax like this, and it would return every column that's less than 2. As you can see, the first column, or the first row, has been eliminated because column 2 is not less than 2. You can also apply things called anonymous functions. And so if you have something called like lambda x is the minimum of the data frame plus the maximum of the data frame, then you can apply that to your data frame, and then that should affect return the results of whatever this should be. So for example, if you run this, you take the minimum of column 1, and then you add it to the maximum of column 1. And this result is negative 1.319626. And then you do the same thing for column 2 as well. So you can run the same thing to another. You can also add another anonymous function. Do you want to try it out? Give an example. So something like df.apply lambda x.
Mean?
OK. Mean x. That's why you don't do live coding during seminars. So it's probably you can also call mean df, and then that should np.mean df, and then that should return the mean as well. Finally, you can describe what different characteristics of that data frame. And so if you do something like df.describe, it returns like how many values inside of are inside that data frame. You can also find things like the mean, standard deviation, minimum, quartiles, and finally the maximum. So it's pretty easy, like once you have all that data loaded in a data frame, if you call like df.describe, then that allows you to access pretty essential variables about that data frame. That way you can work with different things pretty quickly. So if you want to subtract and add the mean, then you have these two values here already. If you want to access things like the mean exactly, you could call like, if this is the table, then you want to call like table mean, or mean, that should access the means as well. Okay. So we're going to go through the data science process together. So the first thing we're going to do is ask a question. So what are some data sets that you're interested in, and what kind of questions do you want to answer with data?
Who's going to win the election?
Who's going to win the election? That's a good one.
Anything to do with stock prices.
Stock prices? What kind of things with stock prices? Kind of similar to CS50 Finance? Or like, if you want to predict how a stock moves up and down?
Yeah.
Or? Okay, yeah, all very interesting questions, and the data is definitely available. So for something like, we can go through that later. So today we're going to be exploring how have Earth's surface temperatures changed over time. And this is definitely a relevant issue as global warming is pretty prevalent, and then temperatures definitely are increasing a lot. We had very hot summer, very hot winter, and so this might be something we want to explore, and there are definitely data sets out there. So for like getting the data in this kind of example, so where do you think you'd get data about who's going to win the election?
I'm sure there are several databases. Or like past results.
Okay. Past results of like previous elections?
Yeah, and polls.
Okay. Where do you think you could get data about elections?
Previous polls.
Yeah, definitely. And as we saw before in like the New York Times visualization, that's how a lot of people predict how the elections are going to go, just based on like aggregating a lot of different polls together. And we can see, take like maybe the mean and see like who's actually going to win based on all of these. That way you account for like any variance or like where different places are and like who different polls are targeting and so on. For something like stock prices, what would you look at? Or where would you get the data? Google Finance, yeah. What do you think?
Bloomberg.
Yeah, for sure. Same thing.
Same places. Okay.
Same places, yeah. And what's really cool is that there are many different industries, or there are industries that are predicated off of both of the questions that you're asking. And so, if you can use data science to predict how stocks are going to move, like that's how some companies operate. Like that's how they decide what to invest in. And then for elections, like if you can predict the election, like that's life-changing. And so here we're going to get the data from this place called Kaggle. As I mentioned before, it's like where a lot of different companies post challenges for data sources, post challenges for data science. And so if we look here, there is a challenge for looking at Earth surface temperature data since 1750, and it was posted by Berkeley Earth pretty recently. You can also, what's great about Kaggle is that you can also look at other people's contributions or like discussion about it if you need help about how do you access different types of data. So if we look at a description of this data, we see a little bit of like how the graphs, we see a brief graph of like how things have changed over time. So we can definitely see this is like a relevant issue. And you can see like from this example of data science already, like it's pretty intuitive to see like what exactly is happening in this graph. We see that there is an upward trend of data happening over time, and we see exactly what are the anomalies over this line of best fit. We also see that this data set includes other different files, such as global land and ocean temperature and so on. And the raw data comes from the Berkeley Earth data page. So if we download this, might take a little bit to download because it's a huge data file because it's containing every single temperature since 1750, by city, like by country, by everything. So it's a pretty cool data set to work with. There's a lot of different data sources, and while this isn't quite like technically big data, like this definitely is a chance to work with a large data set. So if we look here, we can look at global temperatures. And here you can see so here you can see some pretty cool information about the data. You see that it's organized by like timestamp. You can look at like land average temperatures. You can see here might be kind of hard to tell. Land average temperature uncertainty, that's a pretty interesting field. Maximum temperature uncertainty, minimum temperature. So it's always great to look at a data set, like once you actually have it, what kinds of fields there are. And so there's things like date, temperature. We see that there are a lot of different blanks here, which is kind of curious. And so maybe this kind of could get resolved later in the data set. And we see that this goes like all the way up to the 1800s so far. Oh, and then we see here that there are the other fields are populated here. So it's possible that before 1850, they just didn't measure this at all, which is like why we don't have information before. So this is something to keep in mind as we work with the data set. And so we see, there's a lot of information, a lot of really cool data. And so if we want to, we want to work with that. And so we open up our notebook. You import in all of the libraries you already have. The great thing about a Jupyter Notebook is that it already keeps keeps the memory from things that you've loaded before. So up here, we loaded pandas and NumPy already, so we don't have to load them again. And so we just import matplotlib, which is, again, for like visualizations and graphs and everything. And we also import NumPy, which helps you, we already imported that, but helps you work with like arrays and everything. This matplotlib inline allows you to look at graphs like within Jupyter Notebook, and it doesn't, otherwise it would just open up a new window, which can get kind of annoying. And so if you want to see it inline, that way you can work with things pretty quickly rather than switching between windows, it's a good thing to use. And then this is just a style way of like preference for how you want your graphs to look. And so there, if you use default, it's just like blue. I wanted it to be like red and gray and nice, so I changed it. So if you call pd.read_csv, again, remember that pd is referencing pandas, and so this is accessing a module in pandas called read_csv. So it lets you load in a CSV just with a single command, and that way it loads it into your data frame. And so if we call that, so this looks exactly the same way we had it before, or had it in the Excel spreadsheet, just loaded into a data frame. So again, very simple. If you want to see the rest of the file, you can just call df. I just chose head, that way head shows like the first five elements rather than every single thing because it was a pretty long data set. But it does show the first 30, and then also the last 30, I believe. And so you can see that there are 3,192 rows and 9 columns just from loading it in. You can also call tail, and then that should show you the last 5 elements. You can also change the number within here to be like the last 10 elements. So you can see things pretty easily. Next, we want to look at just the land average temperature. That way we can see, we can work with just the temperature for now. The others are a little bit confusing to work with, and so we want to just focus on one column for now. Plus, that's what we're interested in. We want to see how temperature has changed over time, so we want to look at just temperature. And so this is an index, a method to index. And so this takes the columns from 0 all the way up to 2, where it stops at 2, or right before 2, so then it gets the 0th column and the 1st column. The 0th column, remember, is the date time, and the 1st column is the land average temperature. And then again, we want to take the head. So as you see before, it's just the date time and the land average temperature. And we also changed the data frame to be updated to this. That way we can just work with just these rather than the rest of them. Next, as we saw before, df.describe was a very helpful tool. And so if we run that again, that'll allow us to see like basic information about it. And so we see that there are, in total, 3,180. And then we also have a mean temperature. We have a standard deviation for temperature. We have our minimum and maximum as well. And we also see that we have NAN values, which means it's not a number. So that's a little bit curious. We might want to explore that a little bit. In all likelihood, it probably is just that there are not a number of values in there. And so it's kind of hard to it's hard to find like quartiles when some of them are like not valid numbers. So once we have a description, we can see we've gained insights already about it just from those like couple lines of code up here. And so we see that the mean temperature from 1750 to 2015 was 8.4 degrees, which is interesting. Next, we want to just plot it, just so we have a little bit of a sense of how the data is trending. We just want to plot it just to see, like, we can explore some of the data. And plus, it's pretty easy to plot, so like, even if it doesn't look too great, then we aren't losing anything. And so PLT, again, we imported matplotlib, which is the graph that lets you, file that lets you, the library that helps you plot. Matplotlib.pyplot helps you plot, and then if you import it as PLT, you can access all the modules from it just calling PLT. And so we have PLT.figure, which is PLT figure, fig size, that just defines how big that graph is going to look, and so we call it, it's going to be 15 by 5, and so you have like the width is a little bit bigger, and that's to be expected because it should be like a time series graph, and so there will be more years than there are actual temperatures. Next, we're going to actually plot the thing. And so since we have a data frame that has all that information, we can just plug that in. And then this command knows exactly how to sort between the x and the y, so you just need to call that data frame. And yeah, the only thing is that matplotlib can, or usually plots, or in this case would plot a series. You can also plot multiple of them, but a series, as you remember before, is a one-dimensional array with an index, and so in this case, that land average temperature would be, or the temperature itself would be what you plot on your y-axis, and then the x-axis would be the index, so that would be like what year you're in. You can also plot a whole data frame, and then this would just plot like all the different lines all at once. So if you had like a land maximum temperature, then you can see the differences between that. We also have plt.title that changes the title of a whole graph. You have the x label, year, and y label. And finally, you want to show the graph. You can you also don't have to, but just because of Jupyter Notebook, so then same thing happens. And so you see from this graph, it's a little bit noisy. and so we see that there seems to be an upward trend, but it's kind of unclear. Because it looks like things are just skyrocketing back and forth. Do you have an idea why that might be the case?
It's connected dots.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's exactly right. And so we also see, like, from the table up here, there are different months located. And so, like, of course, the temperature will decrease during the winter and increase during the summer. And so as it connects the dots, as you said, then it'll just be connecting the dots between winter and summer, and it'll just be increasing a lot. so this graph is kind of messy. We want to think about like how exactly we can refine it. But we do see that there is a general upward trend, which is a good thing for us to see, probably not good for the world, but it's OK. We also see like we can also pretty clearly see like what the ranges are. And so we see here you can get from as low as like a couple negative degrees up to almost 20 degrees, which is consistent with our df.describe findings. We also see that it goes from the 0 to the 3,000, or almost 3,200-ish, which is not quite correct because we only had the years from 1750 to 2015. And so there's something incorrect here. It's probably referencing the months, maybe? Yeah, exactly, referencing the indexes, but each row is a month. And so it would be like the 0th month, 1st month, and so on. Yeah. So how do you think we can make this graph a little bit smoother so that it doesn't go up and down by like month?
Make a scatter plot?
Scatter plot? But if you had like the points, yeah, we can try that. So df or plt dot plot. Kind equals scatter. And then for a scatter plot, you need to specify the x and the y. So we could have x equals the index, as we said before, and the y equals the actual thing itself. PLT dot. scatter plot. So we still see a couple different, it's still a little bit messy. It's still kind of hard to see exactly where everything is. What else do you think we could do? So right now we have it indexed by month. What do you think we could change about that? Yeah, exactly. So if we average, yeah.
Max temperature?
Yep. All very good ideas and something to definitely explore. So for now, we can just look at the mean of the year, or average of the year. That way we can see, like, because each year has all of the months, it'd be pretty, it would make sense just to average all of them just to see, like, how that's been changing. However, we notice when we look at the timestamp column, which is called DT, if we access that and call the type, it's actually of type stir. So that means all of these dates are recorded inside of the file as a string rather than a date. So that would mean if we want to parse through them, we have to index, or we have to look through every single letter inside of the DT. So what might be helpful is to convert that to something called Pandas has called a date time index. Pandas is very adapted towards like time series data, and so definitely there are a lot of tools in their library for this exactly. So if we convert it to a date time index, we can also group it by a year. And this is a syntax where we take the year for each, or in the index, and then we also take the mean of every single one. So if we run that, and then we plot that again, that's a little bit smoother. So we can definitely see that there is a trend over time. And as there are a lot of different spikes, so it's not incredibly uniform, which makes sense because there are like peaks and valleys for years. But as a whole, like this data set is trending upwards. So this is wrapping up like the exploratory phase. But then we notice something that there is something pretty anomalous here. We see right around the 1750, in the beginning of the 1750s, there's a huge dip down. So before, while it was at 8.5 before, it went all the way down to 5.7. So let's see, there might be a couple reasons why this might be the case, such as maybe there was like an ice age for that 1 year or something, and then it went back up to 8.5, but that's probably not what happened. So let's look into the data a little bit. You know, maybe they messed up something. Maybe someone mistyped a number, so that says like negative 40 instead, or negative 20 instead of 20, or something like that. And so if we look at the data, and it's important to like check in with yourself, make sure that what you're getting is reasonable, we can look in. And so we want to see at what caused these anomalies. Because it was in the first couple of years, we can call something like dot head, which shows the first five elements. And we see here that 1752 is what caused this. And for whatever reason, even though all of the years previous and after had 8 degrees and then 9 degrees, it just goes back down to 6.4 degrees, which matches what we found in our plot. So let's look at that data set exactly. So as you remember, we can filter by Booleans. So if we want to see like if the times of the, if the year of that grouped data frame is equal to 1752, we can see what happened. And so we see here, in this case, we can see every single temperature from every single month and the land average temperature as long as that year is 1752. And because it's a datetime index, we're allowed to do something like that rather than searching the string for every single thing, looking for 1752. And so we see here in this exploration that land average temperature, so while like this January makes sense that it's pretty low, we also have things like not a number. And you have things like, you have a couple other numbers, but then all these summer months are just gone. And so what happens is like when you average this, where it might not have a number, it'll just average the existing values. And so because you're missing those summer months, it'll be low even though it's not supposed to be. So what exactly can we do about that? So there are a lot of null values. We wanna see what exactly we can do. Also, this might be affecting results in the future because what happens if there are other null values in other years? It wouldn't be just exclusive to 1752. And so again, as we tried from that Boolean values, if we call numpy.is not a number, that can access every single thing and determine which cells exactly are not a number. And specifically, like land average temperature is not a number. And so we see here that there are a lot of different values that are all not a number. And so this is okay. It definitely makes sense because no data set is going to be perfect. As we saw before, when we were looking at the data set, it was missing those entire like first or all of these columns, and so it's not ever going to be perfect, which is okay. The thing that you have to do is either work with data that is perfect, or you have to fill in those null values. You have to make sure that it has something that's reasonable that shouldn't affect your data that much, but you should fill it in with something that makes sense. So in order to find out what exactly makes sense, we want to look at possibly other information around it. So if we wanted to predict this February of 1752, how do you think that we could estimate what that should be? Yeah, exactly. Previous and past Februarys are a good way. Another way to do it might be looking at like the January and the March of that same year. It should be somewhere around the middle, maybe. Because to get from that January to the March, you have to be somewhere in the middle, and so February would make sense that it should be like right around the middle. And then you could do the same thing for these values as well. It's kind of a little bit more difficult because you don't have before and after values for where there are a lot in the sequence, but definitely looking at the year before, the year after might be helpful. So what we're going to do today is we're going to be looking at the month before or previous thing that's most valid. So for example, in February, you would look at the month before, so then this would be that January. For this May, you would be looking at the April previously. And then for this June, because the most previous value is that April, you'll be looking at that April value as well. So you'd just be filling that all of these with this April value. So not the most accurate, but it's something that we can at least say it's reasonable. So you're going to be calling, you're going to be changing the value of what that data frame column is. And so we want to set that equal to something else. And it's going to be exactly the same thing, but we're going to be calling a command called fillNA. It's another pandas command, but it fills all of the null values. So these are things like none, NAN, like any blank spaces or anything, just things that would go under NA that you would classify as NA. And the way we're going to fill this is going to be called something ffill or forward fill. So this is going to be things from before, and then it's just going to fill the things like ahead of it. You can also do like backward fill, and there are some other different ways as well. And so once we call that, it changes, and then we can graph that again. And then we see it's a little bit more reasonable. There still are some dips and everything, but you know it can't be perfect, so we might want to try different avenues for the future. That said, the data set definitely looks a lot cleaner than it was before, and we know that there are no null values as of right now, so then we can work with the whole data set and not have to worry about that at all. All the syntax for the plots are pretty similar, so you can always definitely copy it or even create a function out of it. That way you don't have to worry too much about like styling and everything. You can also change things like the x-axis, y-axis, font size, so it's pretty simple. So that concludes our exploration of our data set. Next we want to model our data set a little bit, so predict what would happen based on like future conditions or other variables that could happen. So in your example of like predicting the elections, what would you want to model?
Who gets electoral votes.
Yes, exactly. And then for stock price, what you want to model? Yeah, exactly, and like how that'll change over time. And so there are different ways to model. The model we're gonna use today is called linear regression. So as you might have learned before in class, just like creating a line of best fit, that way you can estimate like how that trend is going to change over time. So this is going to be, we're gonna be calling in a library called sklearn, so this is used for typically like machine learning, but definitely like regression models or just like seeing how things will change over time. This is good for and pretty easy to use. And so this is just a couple of syntax values. That way you can set what that x is and what that y is. You just want to take just the values rather than a series, and that creates like a NumPy array. And then you want to name your when you import this as linear reg, you can just call your regression is equal to this. And then sklearn has a quirky syntax where you want to fit it to your data first, and then you can predict the data based on what you had there. That way, like if you wanted to predict a certain value that wasn't in your data set, you could call that in predict. And so if you call reg.fit xy, that should fit find the line of best fit between x and y. And then if you want to predict something, then you would call reg.predict x. You can also do something called score, which is where you compare your predicted values against your actual values. And so here you put in X, which would be your predictors, and Y, which is like your predicted value. So in this case, X would be like the year, and then Y would be like what exactly that temperature would be. And so you compare what the actual temperature is against like what your predicted temperature is. Next, we want to find that accuracy to see like how good our model is and everything. And so what this compares is how this compares how far the predicted point is from the actual point. Does like residual squares and R squared, if you've heard of that in stats. And so we see that it's not very accurate, but it's better than nothing. It would be better than like a random point. And since this was like a very basic model, like this is actually like not terrible. Like it's a good way to start. And so next we want to plot it to see how exactly, like how inaccurate is it? Because like while this percentage could mean something as to like how accurate it is, it's like not pretty, it's not that intuitive. And so we want to graph it. So again, graph it as we did before. Scatter plot is good for this. And we see how all of these points, you see that we have our straight line of best fit here, that blue line, but then we also have all of our all of our points. And we see that it's like not perfect, but it definitely matches the trend in data, which is what we're looking for. And so if we wanted to predict something like 2050, like we would just extend that line a little bit further. And or if you just wanted the number, you could call reg.predict. And so this is what we did here. Sorry. If you call that reg.predict 2050, so this predicts that the temperature in 2050 will be 9.415 degrees. Which is pretty consistent with what this line is. Do you have any ideas for like a better regression model? So instead of linear, what might we do?
Like a polynomial.
Yeah, exactly. So it looks like that this curve is following the data set is following like a pretty curvy model. We see like while it's pretty straight here, it like curves up here. And so definitely like polynomial might be something to look for. There's also another pretty cool method of predicting called k nearest neighbors, and what this is you find like the nearest points, and then you predict based on that. So, for example, if you had like if you wanted to predict 2016, you would look at the nearest points, which are 2015 and 2014, maybe 2013 if you want that. Like average it together, and then that would be your prediction. There are other regression methods as well. You could do like logistic regression, or like you could use linear regression, but use a few more parameters. That way you can make decrease like the effect a certain predictor has, and so on. But linear regression is a good start. You should definitely look at like the sklearn model or sklearn library, and there are definitely a lot of different models for you to use there. And so the next part is communicating our data. So how do you think we could communicate the information that we have now? Like, who would we want to communicate to on global temperature data?
Put it on the web, make it like interact visual.
Mm-hmm. Yep. What do you think? Same thing? Okay. If you wanted to communicate something about like what your examples are, how do you think you would, once you had data about like election predictions, how do you think you could communicate that? Mm-hmm. Yep. Or what about stock market data? Who would you communicate to? What would you be sharing?
Try to put it in some type of presentation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. That'd be great. And you can like predict, you could present to one of these companies, or you could do it like a stock pitch competition, or like even invest, because maybe you just want to communicate to like yourself, and that's fine too. But the idea is like once you have that data, someone needs to see it. And so that once you have that data, it can generate pretty actionable goals, which is a great thing about data science. So just talking about some other resources, since we've gone through the pretty simple data science process, other resources if you want to continue this further. I'm a part of the Harvard Open Data Project, where we're trying to aggregate Harvard data sets into one central area. That way students can work with that kind of data and create something. So some projects that we're working on are looking at like energy consumption data sets or like food waste data sets, and seeing like how exactly we can make changes in that. Other than that, again, as I showed you before, Kaggle Definitely a great resource if you want to just play with like some simple data sets. They have like a great tutorial on how to predict who's gonna survive like the Titanic crash. So like based on like socioeconomic status or like gender or age, can you exactly predict who will survive? And actually like the best models are pretty accurate. And so that's really cool that just like using a couple regression models and using exactly the same tools that I showed you, it'd just be, you can predict like anything. I mean, your predictions might not be like very correct, but you can definitely create a model that would be more accurate than if you like shot in the dark. Some other tools are like data.gov and data.cityofboston.gov. So again, like more open data sets that you can play with, and you can create like actually meaningful conclusions. And so in data.gov, you could look at a data set on how like economic trends, so how unemployment is changing. You could predict like how unemployment will be in a couple different years, or you can definitely get information about like how the election or how election races have gone in the past. You can definitely reach out to like organizations like Data Ventures that works with other organizations and helps them, or essentially like consulting for another organization using data science. There are a lot of classes at Harvard about this. Definitely CS50 was like sentiment analysis. You can work with that as well. So if you got like all the tweets of like Donald Trump and Hillary Clinton and all the other presidential candidates and like did some sentiment analysis on that, or like looked at different words, you could predict like what exactly might happen. You can also take other classes such as CS109 A and B, which are data science, and I believe advanced topics in data science. CS181 is machine learning as well. There are other classes, I'm sure, that are definitely helping with this. Also, another good resource is like if you just Google things, if you do like Python, pandas, like group by, for example, if you like forget the syntax, you can look through this great resource on, or the great documentation on how exactly to use them. So it gives you examples on like how to like code examples, so in case you like forget from this presentation, or if you're looking exactly like other tools that you might want to use as well. So for example, if you want to do like a tutorial, or if you want to work with like time series, there are a lot of the documentation for pandas is pretty robust, and same thing for the other libraries as well. So like sklearn, like linear regression. Definitely looked that up before, and you can do the same thing where it has like parameters that it takes in, and also like what you can call after you've called, or after you've called sklearn in your regression, like what exactly you can get. So you can get the coefficients, you can get the residuals, or the sum of the residuals, you can get like your intercept. There are some other like information that you can use. They probably have examples as well. They have examples using this. Just in case like you want an example of what exactly yours should look like, or you want code, that's definitely helpful. And finally, just talking a little bit, just so to inspire you a little bit further, I can talk a little bit about my data science projects that I'm working on. So for one of my final projects for a class, I'm trying to predict the NBA draft order just from like college statistics. So there's a lot of information, I think back up to like since the NBA started, on like how exactly draft order is selected, just based on like that college student statistics. And so definitely a lot of people are trying, like there are industries devoted to like predicting what will happen based on those college statistics, like exactly what order, like how much they'll get paid, like how does this affect their playtime while they're on their team, so on. Also, over the summer at Booz Allen, I was developing an intrusion detection system in industrial control systems. And so essentially like what this entails is like industrial control systems are responsible for our national infrastructure. And so if we observe like different data about them, we can possibly detect any anomalies in them. An anomaly might indicate the presence of like an attack or like a virus or something on it. And so better alternative, or possibly better alternative to current intrusion detection systems that might be like a little bit more complex rather than just focusing on data. Something else I'm working on for another final project for a class is looking at Instagram friends based on mutual interactions. And so each person on Instagram, maybe they like certain people's comments, or like certain people's photos more often than other people's photos. Maybe they comment more, maybe they are like tagged in more photos. And so like looking at that information, if you look at like the Instagram API, like it's pretty cool to see like how there is a certain web of influence, and like you have a certain circle that's like very condensed and like expands a little bit further. And what's interesting about that is like celebrities for sure are like, they definitely interact with certain people more or less, definitely like get in hate wars or anything. Or like, for example, Justin Bieber and Selena Gomez, like people found out they broke up because they like unfollowed each other on Instagram. So I think that's interesting. Also, some other things that I've done are like predicting diabetes subtypes based on biometric data. So this was in CS109, first PSAT, I believe. And so given like biometric data, like name, or so it would be like information like name and gender, or sorry, age and gender, but also biometric data like presence of certain markers or like other, like blood pressure or something. You can pretty accurately predict what type of diabetes they'll have or whether they'll have diabetes or not, like type 1, type 2, or type 3. And we can also predict things like urban demographic changes. So see like, because a lot of this information is available online, you know like what socioeconomic status people are in, but you also know like where exactly they're located based on like longitude and latitude. And so if you, based on like how good your regression model is, if you input in like a specific latitude and longitude, you can predict what exactly socioeconomic status they're in, which I think is pretty cool. And like over time as well, because their data set's going back like many different years. So those are a couple ideas. Any questions about data science? Thank you. Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you for coming. If you have any questions, feel free to let me know. My information is here. So if you have any, if you want any like advice or tips or anything, and also these like slides and everything will be posted online if you want to access that again. So thank you.